The following content may be distressing. Listener discretion is advised. If you need to, contact Lifeline on 13 11 14.
Emotional abuse is little talked about, let alone understood. In the previous two episodes of this podcast series, we've heard from two women whose stories were harrowing. Knowing the effects firsthand, I would like to help people avoid the suffering that we endured. To help, I have Inez Carey, 1-800-RESPECT program specialist. Emotional abuse can be as destructive and damaging as physical abuse. Could you talk to us about that, please?
Yeah, sure. So emotional abuse, or emotional violence, as we often call it, is one of the most common types of domestic violence. Certainly of the violence we hear about and that people report to us at 1-800-RESPECT. In terms of emotional violence, people can often be experiencing emotional violence for a long time in their relationship before they are able to recognise that they're experiencing domestic and family violence. So Certainly it's really common for women to contact us and say, I'm not sure if this is okay. And of course, as we know, it isn't. But people can often feel confused when they're experiencing emotional violence.
Well, the idea behind what they're doing in their world is to chip away at self-worth and independence until you feel like you can't get out, and without this person, you'll have nothing. So talk to us about who these people are. Malignant narcissists, they've got troubles themselves and they kind of feed off other people's misery. They are attracted to confident men and women and then want to, I guess, crush that. And that gives them like a power trip, would you say?
I don't know if I'd say it's a power trip. I'd say it's much more insidious in a way, and it can happen slowly over time. Certainly, some people can be with their partners for years before emotional violence or abuse starts. Something might happen in the perpetrator's life to, I suppose, impact on their own sense of self-worth and their own control, because what we know about any kind of domestic and family violence is it's really about coercion and control and a repeated pattern of behaviour. So, as we know, most commonly, by far, emotional violence within domestic and family violence is by far experienced by women at the hands of their male partners.
Mm-hmm. So who are these people? Like, people say to me, he seemed all right, I met him, you know, but they're the masters of modifying their personalities to become exactly the person they think you want them to be to you, and they're good at it to everybody else. That's one of the, I guess, designs behind it. So if you say anything, it makes you kind of look like you're crazy.
Yeah, it's a good point. We talk about the grooming behaviours. So you're right, there are some situations where a perpetrator of emotional violence or any kind of violence will seek out a particular kind of relationship. So it often looks like when you start dating someone that they're totally enamoured with you, they want to spend all their time with you, and that really quickly turns into jealousy, to isolating you from your family and friends. And that's when, you know, at that point, that's when the violence, and particularly the emotional violence, really escalates. There is no kind of, I suppose, profile of what someone who uses violence looks like. As I said, sometimes there can be situations in their life that impact on how they behave, but certainly traits around jealousy and wanting to control their partner's movements and know everything about what they're doing is certainly a very common factor for people who use emotional violence.
Talk about who these people are, the targets of emotional violence, if that was okay, please. A lot of people, like for myself and the two ladies that I've interviewed previously for this podcast series, the three of us all got, oh, only dumb people would, you know, put up with that, blah, blah, blah. It's not a level of intelligence that they target. It's more to the point, I would say, empathy. If you're empathetic, you're like, I'm sorry, you know, I don't want to upset you. I'll do this, this, this. And that's one of the ways that they whittle at your self-esteem.
And I suppose I want to acknowledge and thank you for opening up to the listeners and being vulnerable about your own experience. I mean, domestic and family violence can happen to anyone, so anyone can experience emotional violence within their relationship. I don't know that we can clearly say or define that someone who uses emotional violence has a profile or you know, a certain kind of person that they're wanting to be in a relationship with. What we do know, though, is that if someone has been violent in a relationship, then the likelihood of them continuing to do that in future relationships, if that first
a
one
cycle.
Ends.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
The tactics that they use, a lot of things like words are thrown around that people might not understand, like gaslighting, which is, I guess, mind games where they contradict, deny something, stonewalling, disengaging. What are these sort of tactics, the ways that they try and control you? For the uninitiated that have no idea now, going, oh, my God, these two stories are horrifying. What are the signs? If you've got a friend and you're like, is this guy just a jerk or is he being emotionally abusive, what would those signs be? As a general statement, please.
Yeah. So the signs of emotional abuse, it's basically when someone's causing fear or stops you from living the way that you want to or forces you to do things you don't want to do. Mm-hmm. Most commonly, it's about stopping you from seeing your family and friends and isolating you from your support networks, stopping you from attending regular activities, being intimidated, humiliated, harassed, often in public, so to shame you. Might be threatening you or to threaten to damage your belongings or pets. As awful as it is to acknowledge, that's a really common tactic that perpetrators use, threatening to hurt or kill pets. And things like denying access to phone or computer, withholding mail. You mentioned gaslighting. I'm really glad that you raised that. It's a really common tactic. And for those that don't know, examples of gaslighting, it's the design behind why someone would gaslight their partner is to make them, as you said, feel crazy or like they're losing their mind or their memory. So things like, you know, turning the gas on, that's actually how the name came about. Like, oh, you've left the gas on again, or hiding your keys and putting them in different places so when you're running late for an appointment, you know, the partner's able to say, oh, you know, you're always running late, you're always forgetting things, you're always losing things. We've heard examples of husbands calling up doctor surgeries or when their wife has appointments and changing them. So when she goes to the doctor surgery or goes to her hairdressing appointment, they say, no, you rang 2 days ago and changed it, or we've cancelled it. So making them, you know, look forgetful and disorganised in front of other people, particularly professionals. It's a really pervasive form of emotional violence and unfortunately very common.
Yes, and the feeling that telling someone, you know, so you think, oh, it's just me, maybe I should be better, maybe I should, you know, make more attention where I put my keys.
I mean, the main thing with emotional abuse is the person using abuse is really trying to undermine your sense of self. So when they dismiss what you've got to say, when they tell you that all your interests are silly or stupid.
Trivial.
When you try and have an opinion, particularly one that's different to theirs, they'll not even engage in a kind of dialogue around that. It'll just be to shut you down and tell you you're stupid and you haven't thought about it. And so that kind of language is really common. And you can imagine, and unfortunately you've experienced it, when you are constantly told by the person closest to you at that time that you're stupid, you're worthless, you don't know, you know, what you're talking about, it just erodes your confidence, your sense of self. You really second guess yourself. And if you've been isolated as well, you don't have other interactions where your friends and family can give you back that self-worth, because, you know, they're kind of isolating you from your support networks is the other side of what happens in emotional abuse and domestic violence.
Absolutely. So trauma bonding is, I guess, where we're up to now. A thing that is said a lot, and even they said to me, like, why'd you stay so long? You know, just people that they mean well when they're saying it, but you read it online, on Facebook and all that sort of stuff. Oh, why did they stay if it was that bad? Blah, blah, blah. It's to do with many reasons, but trauma bonding. If you could talk to us about that, please. You're at a stage where you feel that you have nothing. You can't be anything without this person.
I'm really glad you raised it. It's actually, I suppose, the thing with domestic violence and abuse in relationships is they're not always abusive, and they never always started out abusive from the get-go. So there'll be times where a partner will be intimate or affectionate, often after an episode of, you know, using any form of emotional abuse, there'll be the coming back and I didn't mean it and trying to repair that relationship. So we talk about a cycle of violence, which again, when you're experiencing that, is so confusing because you're still trying to recover from what's been happening for the past week, and then they come with this extreme other behaviour that appears so caring and adoring. And I think, you know, it takes a while to build that kind of confidence back up to be able to leave. And if you've constantly had your sense of self eroded, you think about any kind of relationship, if you try and say, I need to leave, and you're living together and you've got children and pets, that is so much more difficult. You're so much more tied together. So I think the thing to say in relation to people that are experiencing domestic or family violence, or in that experiencing that cycle, they're starting to recognise this is not okay and I need to do something. It takes time, like, you know, to connect with supports, to feel like you've got choice and confidence again as well. But what I would also say is there's absolutely support out there, as we know.
Yes. Leaving the person, when you get to the stage when you realise that you need to leave, most of us, as a general statement, at least the three of us in this podcast series, it took us a few goes to finally get the courage to leave. We're promised, you know, the world that I'll never do it again, I swear, blah, 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 blah. And then you realise it's never going to happen. Talk to us about the no contact rule and how that's really important once you leave, because their goal is like you're almost a fuel or a feed, you know, of their self-worth, and it make them feel good about themselves. That's, I guess, why they're doing it. Well, one of the reasons why they're doing it to people.
Yeah. And it's not just what they're trying to get out of it. The whole thing with once you've left and you're trying to maintain that no contact rule, what we know is the time of greatest danger for a woman is just after she's left the relationship. Statistically, it's a horrible statistic, but that's the time that a woman is most vulnerable to being killed by her ex-partner in relation to domestic violence. So it's really important to have supports around you, not just when you leave, but ongoing. Because while you leave the relationship, the impact that that's had on you, on your sense of self, having to reach out and reconnect with your supports and your family, that takes time to rebuild. And for many people, you know, the impact of domestic violence, it can take years to get that sense of self-worth and sense of self back, which is why we really encourage not just having professional support, but working with you to find ways to increase like your family and friendship supports and networks and being connected to local community again.
How can you help yourself, besides what you've said then, which is wonderful, not to make the same mistake again? One lady asked me to ask you, how do you protect your mental health after being exposed to emotional abuse for many years? How do you prepare yourself mentally to get out, and then the aftereffects? So you don't cripple to the no contact rule. You don't cripple to the flowers or his mate that he's called and said, oh, you know, I hear you broke up. Why? Oh, he's really sad. He really misses you. He's a nice guy, la, la, la. And then you go, oh, God, I... And how do you stay strong? Would you have any advice?
Yeah. You actually just touched on a point, Emma, that reminded me that the one thing, while someone who's using violence will isolate you from your family and friends, when you are around family and friends, they'll look like the nicest person in the world. So they'll, you know, really turn on the charm. And again, that's kind of like a gaslighting technique of, you know, if you do then go and try and say to a friend or family member, you know, he's been emotionally abusive, you know, he's being physically abusive, you know, whatever's going on in that relationship, you're less likely to be believed because he's presenting himself in such a positive and friendly way to everyone in your world. So that's absolutely part of the tactic. In terms of preparing to leave, so we really do talk about preparing to leave, unless there's a situation of extreme crisis or violence or danger, it often takes women time to prepare. So telling someone is the biggest thing. There's so much secrecy and shame around domestic and family violence. And, you know, we now know, thankfully, there's much more reporting on it, and podcasts and shows like yours are trying to raise awareness. So when you tell someone, like tell a trusted friend, even if it's, you know, a colleague at work, call 1-800-RESPECT, link into local services. And of course, you know, if you call 1-800-RESPECT, we can help you with that. But never, ever do it alone. There's always support and options out there to assist you with that, and to plan for it as well, because the ultimate aim is to keep you safe. And you know, if we're able to plan with you to do that, that, you know, that also increases the empowerment that you feel about being able to leave.
Yeah, that you have some option.
Yeah, exactly. For us, the most important thing is for women leaving domestic violence to know that they've got choice and options out there. They might not want to act on them then and there. It can take some time for women to build up that confidence to be able to go, I need to do something, I need to leave. And of course, then when you leave, you've still got all of that emotional, the impact of that emotional abuse, as one of your callers mentioned and asked about. So counselling, you know, linking into a local counselling service is really important. Doing things that are really reconnect you with feeling strong and confident again. So, you know, exercise and physical well-being. It sounds like such a simple thing, but it's so important to feel strong in your body again, to be able to feel control. You're usually living with a lot of anxiety and panic when you've experienced emotional violence. So things like eating well and exercise and certainly, you know, being able to connect into counselling are some of the best known ways of working through that. But in just ensuring you're not alone and really reaching out to your friends and family.
In my situation, I had no idea that I was in an emotionally abusive relationship. And a few of my friends are like, leave him. My ex-boss was like, this has got to be the last time. You can't possibly take him back. And he'd pull all sorts of stuff. And I did. The thing that pushed me over the line, the thing that made me realize, okay, this is not a unique situation. It's not just a damaged person if I try harder and be nicer and, you know, more helping to his insatiable needs that I could never fulfill because they would always consistently change. The thing that pushed me over the line is one of my friends said, you are in an emotionally abusive relationship. And I said, what's what? And then I looked it up online and I read my life story. So for my friends that tried really hard for many years to help me get out, and I knew deep down in my head that there's something wrong, but I didn't realize that was the trigger for me to realize this is never going to get better. In fact, this is going to get worse. Do you have any advice for friends on the outside, like in my situation there where they tried? And the thing that got me was when I heard, like if I listened to this podcast, I would have, it would have been the same thing to help me out and realize, hey, this is my life too. I've got to get out of it. Is there, from an outside perspective, friends can only do so much, but would you have any advice on how they can help the person that they love?
Yeah. You have a great friend.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. And that's really true. Like that's the basic thing that you can do is believe your friend, take their fears really seriously, let them know that it's not okay and name the violence as your friend did with you and just say, this is what you're going through and it's not okay. You have the absolute right to be treated with respect and dignity in your relationships. So really saying those kind of statements like violence is never okay, because when someone's lived with emotional violence for such a long period of time, it can take time to really recognise what's going on, because it becomes such a constant way of how you've been treated, so that it becomes the norm almost. You can't kind of step outside it. So that's what a friend can do. They can really go, I'm worried about you. I want you to be safe. So using words like safe can really impact on a person experiencing domestic violence, because they've probably not realised that they haven't felt safe for a very long time.
Mm.
Never make excuses for the person who's hurting them, and try not to go into too many, I would always try and avoid questions, like Let your friend talk and share as much as they need to, and use the language that they use. So never try and tell them that they're in trauma. A lot of people don't yet, might not recognise that that's what they're experiencing or living with in terms of their own emotional well-being, but they might not connect with that word. So just simple things like that, and just tell them that you'll, you know, look, let's jump online together. Let's look at some supports, or, you know, sit with them while they call 1-800-RESPECT or their local domestic and family violence support service. Going online and looking at things together, like, you know, there's lots of fact sheets on the 1-800-RESPECT website, that can sometimes be a way of opening up a conversation, because these conversations are difficult and, you know, and we shouldn't be having them very often, hopefully, but the reality is, you know, domestic violence is so common that we need to be able to let anyone that's experiencing it in our lives know that it's not okay, and we're here to support them and to connect them to support.
Absolutely. In no way is this next question encouraging anyone to stay, but it's a curious thing where people say, can malignant narcissists, can these emotionally abusive people, can they change? Like, many a times that's what kept me, because he said, I swear I'll change, I'll get better. But as a general statement, from at least the reading that I've done, these people most of the time don't change. It's possible that they can change, but after years and years and years of being in, I guess, the rut that they're in, they don't want to, because they're getting out of other people, if it's not me, it's somebody else, the same as what I was using the term, fuel.
I like to believe everyone can change, but that's not to say that people do. Unfortunately and sadly, people that use violence will continue to do that often in their next relationships, and they're very unlikely to change without receiving help and support. So there are services out there like Men's Line and Men's Referral Service that people can contact, and certainly we've had some males who use violence contact us, and we've been able to link them into those services, because we don't work with perpetrators. But, you know, that's very few and far between.
And love is another thing too, because they think, well, he loves me, but there's these people, for the most part, only really truly love themselves. And I know that I'm generalizing there again too. Is there anything that you can say about that? Because I guess one of the reasons, besides trauma bonding, is that we love these people that hurt us. We believe them. We want to believe them.
Yeah, and that's part of, I think, the pattern of really bringing you in and being quite beguiling and adoring at the start of the relationship. But, you know, love isn't being abused or being undermined or not having your opinions heard or respected. Love should never make you feel unsafe. And if you're feeling any of those things, then of course there's often dependence there. So you feel, you know, like people often leave the relationship and go back and leave, and it sounds like that's what happened to you, and that's actually really common, because we want to hope that their behaviour can change and that they can be caring or the ideal of how they presented themselves when we first met them, but the reality is that's not the case. So I think, you know, if you're starting to lose self-love because of the way you're being treated, like, you know, being able to love and care for yourself is the most important thing. And if the partner in your life is using emotional violence or any kind of violence, that is not okay, and it's not love.
That was episode 3 of the first series of Emotional Abuse, A Conversation, chatting with 1-800-RESPECT program specialist Inez Carey, discussing emotional abuse in romantic relationships. To hear the rest of this series and series 2, which delves into emotional abuse when it comes from family members, Google Emotional Abuse, A Conversation, or check out both series on iTunes.